Stay with her, guys. Look here, Cornette's got a car. He's coming. Look here. Oh, my.
Welcome back, everyone, to this week's Smoky Mountain Wrestling Podcast, where this week we are tackling episode number 22 from June the 27th of 1992. If you remember, when we went off air last week, Bullet Bob told Cornette and the Heavenly Bodies he was giving a lot of leeway to the Fantastics. I believe we even poked some fun at Family Friendly beginning to basically evaporate once we heard our beloved commissioner say that. Well, Doc, before we can even get into this episode, we see the end of a brawl with the Heavenly Bodies and Fantastics that ends with the Heavenly Bodies jumping in Cornette's car, I assume, and Jackie Fulton shattering, and I mean shattering, the rear windshield. It's only a few seconds of the clip, but it's apparent the shit hit the fan at a recent house show or something like that. Now, you heard the audio at the very beginning of this episode, right before the music started, with the end of the melee, so to say. Doc, before you tell me what you think of this as this week's episode is about to start jumping off, how are you doing? And then what did you think of that melee that we just witnessed?
Well, welcome back to the Smoky Mountain Sweatshop. Folks, I got to tell you something here. I'm going to pull back the curtain a little bit. Happy New Year's, everybody. Now, I know you're not listening to this anywhere near the first of the year, but as you know, we record these in advance. So Mild Mike Mills
are recorded in advance, just so you know, right? That they're not live. I mean, I just wanted to make that point.
Right. So Mild Mike Mills has me up at before 9 o'clock on New Year's Day.
Oh, go fuck yourself. You can fucking go jump off a fucking bridge. I didn't want to do this morning. You're the motherfucker. Come on, man. Let's do this. Fuck you.
So we're back inside the Smoky Mountain Sweatshop. Mild Mike, don't let his bullshit fool you. He's in a sour mood. I'm happy to be here. One of the reasons I'm happy to be here is that I got to tell you, I don't want to give away the secret early, but I think this is my favorite episode of Smoky Mountain so far, episode 22. I think this is a hot-ass episode with a lot of things going on. And one of the things that I love about this episode is the open. It's a cold open. The guys are brawling. There's no music or anything else. It's just it feels like a fight. It felt really raw and real. And they used to do shit like this back in the day when, you know, people had personal issues and were really pissed at each other. And I also liked it because this was a house show. So they explained this in a little bit, but they advanced a storyline at a house show. How refreshing is that? I mean, I don't know that you're going to have the heavyweight title get flipped at a house show, but it's not just let's go out there and go through the motions and flip and flop and not have anything happen. So, again, this is a fantastic, no pun intended, episode, and it's hot, and let's get it going.
Shit hit the fan like it used to in the old days. And if you remember, when we went off the air last week, or we were recapping last week, I came unglued. I thought it was great when Cornette cut that promo and he said, he's giving him a loaded gun. Who's going to protect us? Or something to that effect. So I really enjoyed that. And we're now seeing it play out. So let's get into things. We are at Cumberland High School in Cumberland, Tennessee. New venue, Doc. You got anything for us on our venue that we're at? I mean, sometimes you do a little research.
I did a little research.
Okay.
We are in Cumberland, Kentucky.
Oh, shit. Did I say Tennessee?
You did.
My bad. Let me say this. All the people in Cumberland, my apologies. I don't want to offend anyone.
I believe there's a Cumberland or a Cumberland Gap, Tennessee. So it's an honest mistake. I'm gonna try to give you the benefit of the doubt here in 2017. We are in Kentucky. Population is about 2,500. There was a lot of fluctuation in population back then, and probably due to some coal mining, you know, ebbs and flows. We're in famous Harlan County. You know, you hear a lot of stories about Harlan, Kentucky, and how every time people went up there, it was a fight or a riot. That may explain the crowd being as hot as they were for this episode. Cumberland's in southeastern Kentucky, for those of you who don't live in the area. Mike, I got to tell you, these are current day statistics, but the median income for a family in Cumberland is $22,300.
God damn.
And almost 40% of the population lives below the poverty line.
God damn.
So these people are spending their hard-earned disability or government cheese on wrestling. So we want to thank the people for giving up just the few pennies of disposable income they have to come join us down at the wrestling.
That's great, Doc. You said that sound like trying to be funny and insulting the good people as you usually do. I could be wrong, but whatever. That's what I thought.
All right, new year, new me, pal.
Go fuck yourself. Goddamn, pal. All right, so let's get into things. We got Bob Cottle, Dutch Mantel, there at the desk. We get the typical setting of the table from Bob and Dutch Mantel. Dutch Mantel is not happy with the Fantastics and says they're no different than those rioters and street thieves in Los Angeles. For you youngsters out there, just so you know, I believe Dutch is probably referring to the riots that took place after the Rodney King verdict, which left over 50 people dead and approximately 2,000 injured.
This would have been about 2 months after that. So, yeah, it was fresh in the news.
Right. So I point this out because, you know, chalk that up to another reason why WWE sucks. And I don't mean to blame. I'm not saying WWE's fault had anything to do with the Rodney King riots. My point is, I doubt you would ever see WWE poking fun or having a little, I don't want to say poking fun, but just mentioning it like that on their wrestling show. If there was some type of disaster or riots going on, you can bet your ass that the corporate shareholders wouldn't allow that shit and you ain't going to see it make the air. So anyway, that's just my way of burying the WWE again, as I've been doing the last few weeks. Shareholders just ain't letting that type of commentary fly on air, in my opinion. Dutch also says he's going to get the heavenly body side of the story on Down and Dirty with Dutch on this week's episode. Doc, weigh in here with your thoughts on everything that we just heard.
Well, I mean, I just setting up a fantastic, again, another awesome episode. So let's hit the ring, bro.
Yeah, real quick, Bob Cottle does remind us that we will see the brawl in its entirety later on in the hour. And spoiler alert for later on in the hour, I'm not going to actually play the brawl, obviously, because you just hear the audio from it. But that shit went on forever. And we will talk more about that as we get into the episode. The first match up is Joe Kazana versus Dixie Dynamite. You know, Dixie comes out and Dutch is not happy with his sparklers again. Bob Cottle is still just on his comments about Dixie being quick and explosive. Jesus Christ, Bob Cottle wears that out. But you know what? I still love him. Bob also wants answers about the brawl that they saw. Dutch wants the Fantastics in jail. He seems to think they're criminals. We finally get onto the match after a little bit of back and forth in the beginning between those two. Dixie shoots off Kazana and takes a tackle from Kazana. Then Dixie drops down, leapfrogs over Kazana. Then he hip tosses Kazana, drop kicks and arm drags Kazana. I really like that sequence. It just was like that old school mentality of old school just wrestling, where the babyface would, you know, get their spots in the beginning. I hate to say it like that, but that's just exactly what it is. So it reminded me of the good old days of wrestling. Bob Cottle, again, starts in with that quick shit again. Quick, fast, fast pace, you know, like he always likes to say. Dutch tells him to shut up with that quickness talk. This is a hot crowd. You mentioned it in the beginning, Doc, but these fans are yelling, you know, Dixie, and then they pan to some kids wearing some knockoff Dixie Dynamite mask. I'll let you give some commentary in a second, Doc, because Dutch says this is a bad idea. This is not a good role model for kids because they could go into a 7-Eleven and rob the joint. Cottle says, no, 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 Dutch, these are good-mannered kids with good parents. They're excellent trained kids, almost like they're dogs. This discussion, it finally ends with Dutch telling Bob, you know what I think about parenting? And then Dutch says, if your parents never have children, chances are you'll never have children. Cottle says, you know, you're right, Dutch. Literally not even 20 seconds later, Dixie lands a Confederate kick and gets the win. Thoughts on the match, Doc?
I don't really care about the match, but there's a lot of other stuff going on. I just, you know, he said they'll probably rob a 7-Eleven. There probably wasn't a 7-Eleven in many of these towns they went to, so I just wonder how that reference went over. How does Bob Caudle know that these kids are all well-mannered? He can't know that unless he's out there talking to a bunch of kids, which is kind of weird. And, you know, you said excellently trained kids like dogs. That's something those old-timers like to do. You know, back in my day, we didn't even give a shit about our kid. We just made them walk around outside in the cold and shit, toughen them up.
Yeah, I don't know about that train comment. Like, immediately when I heard it, I was like, is he talking about dogs here? Because you train dogs. I guess, I don't know. Good, but anyway, it is what it is. Bob was trying to take up for the children in Tennessee.
But I,
Kentucky,
I would
see, wherever we're at.
Yeah, I mean, there's more excellent, in my opinion, excellent back and forth between Bob and Dutch coming up a match that I thought was okay, but not great. And in my opinion, we should keep moving because the gold is yet to come.
Yeah, we got a promo coming up next, and it is Bob and Dutch with Bob Caudle interviewing primetime Brian Lee. This is rather lengthy, so let me set the stage for you here. When I say rather lengthy, There's a first part of the promo, which lasts about a minute, and then they cut to like a video montage in the middle of the promo of Primetime Brian Lee and everything that's going on. So you'll hear Primetime Brian Lee mention this, and then what we'll do is I'll hit the fast-forward button, and then we'll catch up with the back half of the promo, which there's some gold here. So hang tight. This is a good one, and kind of sets the stage for some things that are going to happen in Smoky Mountain over the next, I'll say, few weeks, maybe month or two.
This, and I'm sure the fans know too that Brian Lee's been hounded every step of the way and every step he's taken by Paul Orndorff, the Dirty White Boy, and Mr. Ron Wright. And at Summer Blast, he has a chance at all three of them. Now, earlier today, I spoke to him about the tag partner that he selected. Let's go now to the special feature with Primetime Brian Lee. Fans, Brian Lee and I have been talking about some of the exciting things happening in Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and Brian has said, let me have this time. I want to tell all of the fans who my surprise partner is going to be at Summer Blast. That's in a tag team match against the Dirty White Boy and Paul Orndorff. What about it?
Yes, Bob, I want to tell you, and I want to tell all the fans, from day one I've had a problem with Dirty White Boy and Paul Orndorff as well. You know, I get Dirty White Boy this close to pinning him in the ring, Paul Orndorff jumps me from behind. I get Paul Orndorff this close, Dirty White Boy jumps me from behind. I'll sit here and tell you and the fans as well, I can't handle 2 men at one time. So I want to show you this tape and show you exactly what I mean.
They are just teeing off on it.
They're trying to annihilate that guy, Dutch.
Now look.
Brian, I think we all agree, and that tape is a perfect illustration of the fact that you haven't been able to get him one-on-one.
No, I haven't, Bob, but one-on-one is no problem for me on any man. But I tell you what, I knew I needed a partner to stand beside me. Tim Horner, the Fantastics, Robert Gibson, they're involved with something else right now, and I knew I needed a man to stand by my side the whole time. So I went in the dressing room, I asked the wrestlers, I asked the fans, who's the toughest wrestler to ever step in the ring in these parts? And the name kept coming up time and time again. So I made a phone call, and I'll tell you what, you'll hear this message right here.
That's right. Everybody knows what this is. This... what made me a famous man in professional wrestling, my right hand, along with the rest of my ability and my intestinal fortitude. And now I hear that Paul Orndorff and the Dirty White Boy think they're tough and bad. Bad and tough, whatever you want. Well, I'm going to tell you, boys, I'm a Smoky Mountain boy myself, because a few years back, I lived in the Smoky Mountain area, and I ruled the area. And now I hear that you guys want to be king of the hill. Well, I hear what you've done to Brian Lee, and Brian Lee has called me and asked me to come and help. Well, I'll be glad to come and help. I just turned 41 years old. I'm like a George Foreman. I'm in the better shape of my life, and there's nothing more I like to come and rule that area again. And I'm going to tell you, Dirty White Boy, you better start shaking in your boots, because when this right hand here hits you, you're going to think the end came down on you. And Paul Orndorff, you think you're the king of the pile driver? But I'm going to tell you something. I used the pile driver, boy, before you even thought about wrestling. So, my friend, get that head ready. If I were you, I'd wear a high hard hat. And if I were you, I'd wear a face mask to protect that nose of yours, because I'm going to do some business on you guys. And don't forget the Garvin Stomp. I was the one-man gang at one time, and I'm the hands of stone. So you boys think you've done something in wrestling? Ha ha! You haven't done anything like Ronnie Garvin's fixing to do.
Geez, Brian, what a surprise. I'm sure all the fans and everybody's going to be shocked. Here, Ronnie Garvin, the man with a hand of stone, is coming back, and he's going to be your partner at Summer Blast.
You're exactly right, Bob. Dirty White Boy and Paul Orndorff, every time you've hit the ring and it's been 2-on-1, you've hit me in the head with chairs, you hit me in the head with briefcases, boards. I tell you what, Dirty White Boy, you call yourself dirty and you think you got a punch. You wait till you're on the other end of this punch. And Paul Orndorff, you call yourself, you have the biggest, the baddest pile driver in wrestling. Wait till this man puts a pile driver on you. And I tell you, the score's going to be settled because it's 2-on-2, not 2-on-1 anymore. And when we come to that Coliseum in Summer Blast, what we're going to do is blast you right out of the Coliseum because there's nowhere to hide and nowhere to run. So lace them up tight, boys, because the showdown's coming. Summer Blast. Ron Garvin, Primetime Brian Lee, we're taking you out.
All right, Doc, I'll let you kind of weigh in, man. That was it was lengthy, but we had a lot that went on there. So you want to tell us what you think?
Well, we've got a big surprise. We've got a former NW heavyweight champion entering the scene. That's huge news. It's a surprise. I loved it back in the day when territories would bring in big names. So that feels like a throwback. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I'll let this kind of a little bit of a spoiler out for an upcoming episode. I believe they show him in the ring against Rick winning the NWA World title. I forget what
episode
it is.
But,
I mean, that's not a spoiler. It's just that because everyone knows it happened. However, I just kind of want to say that. So that is a big deal. And, you know, we talked about that early on when, like, the Wild Bunch came in and you had these different people who would show up, even like a Doug Furness, who we haven't seen in a few weeks. Not sure when or if we'll see him again. But my point is, like to what you said, you get people, you get surprises that come into the territory. And that's what made territory wrestling great. Nowadays, you turn on Monday Night Raw, you already know who's going to show up, even if it's supposed to be a fucking surprise. So what the fuck ever.
You got a core group of guys that are going to carry the water for the duration of the promotion. But you're constantly bringing in guys to help pop the territory. And that's one of the greatest things about watching Smoky Mountain from here on out is just the different caliber and size of names come through the territory that, and Garvin really, to me, is the first in that line. I thought that Primetime Brian Lee was really good in this segment. They got him seated in an empty arena where I guess he was less nervous and couldn't sway, and he could really focus on delivering the message. I like the idea that he's saying, I could beat anybody 1-on-1, but I can't beat 2-on-1. So he had to call it, you know, he had to go to figure out who he could get to help him because everybody else is occupied, except for, I guess, Hector Guerrero doesn't fit the bill for him. The other thing here is that I thought they missed an opportunity because I don't see what the difference is between Caudill having him in an empty arena. What's the difference at and down and dirty with Dutch? So I could see that they missed an opportunity for Dutch to be like, what the fuck? I paid all this money to get my segment, and now Caudill just gets the champ? What the fuck? But whatever.
No, I like that. I don't mind that at all. I thought that was fine. I like the fact that Caudill did it, and, you know, because if they wanted to play off of something, Dutch could do exactly what you said. What is this shit? I'm the one who's got the segment. Why are you interviewing him? But it didn't happen, but
fine.
I mean, that was cool.
That's fine, because we're not going to talk about what they missed, because there's plenty of stuff going on here. They've got, for those of you who haven't watched the episode yet, you know, used to you get the big names that would cut the promo in their territory in the backdrop, so you see the Mid-Atlantic backdrop. Well, Ron Garvin's in his, which I thought was interesting. He has the smallest microphone in the history of microphones.
You cut out. Did you say he was in his living room?
He was in his living room.
Yeah, that's what I thought you said, yes.
In front of his fireplace, which
What a weird-looking microphone. I don't know what the fuck it was.
It was the smallest microphone in the history of microphones, handheld, that is, and they used that thing throughout the entire run of Smoky Mountain. And so I've never seen a microphone that looked like that before. I don't know. Maybe I'm not an aficionado, so I don't know.
I mean, I did only local TV back in the day, and I never saw a microphone like that. Every microphone I ever saw looked like a standard microphone. I guess is the best way for me to explain it. Yeah.
So I'm not poking holes in this because I like the segment, and again, this is my favorite episode of Smoky Mountain so far. But I thought it was interesting that Garvin put over being 41 and being old. And he references George Foreman, and for the kiddies who think that's a grill, he was also one of the first guys to box well into his 40s. Now you see guys like Bernard Hopkins boxing into their 50s. But back then, that was a big deal. I mean, guys didn't really go into their 40s a lot, except in wrestling. So Garvin puts over being 41. Remember when that was old?
Well, yeah, and he references Foreman because I want to say that's when Foreman came back. Like that's when he made his comeback in that era. Like he came. Remember when he came back and had the fights with like Holyfield and stuff? So
yeah,
that was a Foreman reference there. So you're right. Yeah, he's not just a griller. He's actually was a fighter, and it was pretty amazing if you watched Foreman back then.
He was mean and tough, especially back in the 70s. The other thing here that I thought was interesting, and it's one of those things you can get away with back in the day, is he says he's 41 and that he's been pile driving people since before Orndorff even started wrestling. But Orndorff is actually older than Ronnie Garvin. So I thought that was pretty funny. And just by a couple of years. But, Garvin was talking to Orndorff like he's significantly older when actually he's a couple of years younger. So Garvin's positioning himself as the old man in the territory when really he's not. And that's okay. It's just semantics and we got to talk about something. But all in all, we're bringing in a big name, a former NWA heavyweight champion to help, you know, even up the odds. And so the baby faces have made their stand. And now we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah, I like the promo. I don't have anything negative to say about it. I think it was really good. I think when I say really good, you know, I thought that Primetime Brian Lee was on the money. I didn't think he like drug things out. I think he made his point. I think he was succinct, and I think that it was a positive. Ronnie Garvin's kind of part went on for a long time, but you know, again, I'm nitpicking. Again, good to see a big name face coming into the territory, which I don't remember the timeline, and I don't remember when Ronnie Garvin was done with the NWA or and whatnot, but I would have guessed this would have been a good surprise and a good get for Cornette at that point in time. And,
well, he was the NWA – I don't know either, but he was NWA champion in late 87, I believe. He held it for a couple of months, and that was back when that still meant something. So, yeah, I'd have to – and he said he had been there before, so he probably had some recognition, and he was probably a big name, don't you think?
No, there's no probably. Bo James actually talked about that on when he was on Booking the Territory with us. He had said that Ronnie Garvin in that area was known as the original one-man gang in that area. That's why he references the Tennessee and his roots and coming up there, because he did. He was a big name in that area from the way Bo James described it to me, which I would have never known that because, you know, I never saw wrestling in that area until now.
So we had a really strong segment. Let's go over to the next segment, which isn't so good.
Yeah, we got Phil Rainey. He's interviewing Hector Guerrero and Tim Horner. And let's just cue this puppy up and get to it.
Wrestling fans, Smoky Mountain Wrestling is the major league of professional wrestling. We have the stars to prove it. When Smoky Mountain Wrestling comes to your area, you'll make sure that you want to have your date marked on the calendar and be at ringside for some of the greatest wrestling in East Tennessee or wherever you might be watching the television set. Now let's bring in some of the stars of Smoky Mountain Wrestling, the guys you see in the ring battling for trophies, battling for titles, battling for prizes. First of all, let's talk to Hector Guerrero.
I'm very excited to be in your area. Not only that, I want to tell all my Mexican amigos and all the Mexican people, los espero allí, les vengan a verme porque los quiero ver. All I'm saying in English is come and see me. I'm ready to see you. And I'm not just being for American people and Mexican people, but all kind of people. And I'll be right there. And Smoky Mountains is the best thing to happen in this area. And I'm here with you.
White Lightning, Tim Horner, you're creating quite a storm in the East Tennessee area, the Smoky Mountain area.
You got that right, storm, and where there's storm, you know there's lightning, and that's what it is. White Lightning, that's what I'm all about. And no matter where we go over the Smoky Mountain wrestling area, no matter what town, what city, what arena, White Lightning's going to be there. And I'm 230 pounds of romping, stomping, walking, talking, jib-jiving, socializing. I walk tall and do it all. And if you don't believe me, come out and see me, and I'll tell you what White Lightning is all about.
White Lightning, Tim Horner. Now, let's meet the man everybody's after here in the Smoky Mountain Wrestling area. the heavyweight champion primetime, Brian Lee.
You're exactly right when you say everybody's after me. You see this gold here? When you're carrying the gold, you might as well put a dot right on your forehead because everybody's aiming at you, baby. But I can tell you one thing. It's going to take more than talk to knock down primetime Brian Lee. 6'8", 280 pounds, and I'm coming straight at you. I love the Smoky Mountain area, and I love this wrestling. Smoky Mountain is competition, and that's what primetime Brian Lee's about, is competition. And I tell you what, when we come to your town, come and see us because we're going to explode all over you at Smoky Mountain.
Wrestling fans, when we come to your area, make sure that you have a ringside seat for Smoky Mountain Championship Wrestling.
All right, Doc, you want to unpack this puppy in a rather quick fashion? That way we can get to the real good shit this episode?
Well, so we just put over primetime Brian Lee, so uh-oh.
I'm going to disagree with you if you're about to bury him because I thought he did fine there.
Well,
I thought he was all right. You got to remember, this is just a promo trying to get people to come see the wrestling live. So there's not really a big angle he's working here. He's just cutting a promo trying to get the people into the building when they come to the cities live.
Well, he said he's got a dot on his forehead. So I was just wondering if he's Indian now.
Oh, God. Come on, man.
What?
What are you trying to offend people for with that?
I'm not. I'm really not. Speaking of offensive.
Well, actually, when he said that, I thought he meant like he's got people with a laser scope.
Oh,
firing down on him.
Oh, well, do you think Hector Guerrero's Spanish stuff was actually a heel move in that part of the country?
Hard to say. I would assume, you know, not like where we live in Dallas-Fort Worth, that there probably is not a high population of Mexican-Americans there. And so I don't know, man. But see, you're basing that on today's environment where you got a lot of people who are, you know, believe we need. I don't want to get in a fucking political discussion, but
let me help you out.
There's people who want stronger immigration laws and people who don't, and there's a whole lot of shit. And again, I'm not getting into political shit right now. We're trying to have fun. Fuck politics at this point in time.
So Tim Horner's back to jiving and
God damn. This motherfucker.
My note here was Tim Horner's been average for too long. He couldn't stand it, so he's back to being putrid.
You know what I think that was with this jip job and socializing shit with Tim?
No.
Gangsta rap was like a thing, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s. And we're in 92 at this point. I'm wondering if that was Tim Horner's way of trying to be hip and quote some rhymes. Because that is what that is if you really...
I can almost guarantee you that Tim Horner had no clue about gangsta rap back then, other than maybe hearing that it was on the news in some bad fashion. And he may still not understand any of it to this day. I guarantee you he was not appropriating it. What I'm going to tell you is not to be stoke racial fires and all. The people may not want to hear this, but the poor country folk of the Smoky Mountain, and I'm not, I mean, they're generally tend to be poor. There's not a lot of difference between those folks and the people that in the ghetto in L.A. There's just not a lot of difference. They talk a lot. They speak kind of the same. They're into some of the same kind of things. They don't ever want to know this, but there's not a lot of difference. And so I think he's reflecting he's trying to be cool in his scene, just like the gangster rappers were trying to be cool in their scene.
Take it from a poor kid who's been and seen both sides of it in the black community and the white. Ain't much difference between poor white folks and poor black folks.
Poor is poor, brother.
I'm just saying.
And there's no shade on poor people. Poor. We've all been poor, but you're not as different as you think.
Right. But anyway,
let me just help out all you poor people and tell you something. The real Booker man don't see the color. Only color the real Booker man sees is green.
Okay, Cunty Doc. Can we move on?
Sure.
Well, I'm telling you, that's what hit me with that jip job and socializing shit. I was like, is he trying to fucking quote like gangster rap? Because NWA had gotten past that. There was that going on. It was just so much going on
in
the world.
Tim
at that
Horner's
time.
Tim Horner's a guy that would say he's trying to be hip by saying he's being hep.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I mean. You're missing my point, kind of. But anyway, all right, let's go to the next segment. I know I played like 10 minutes of promos, but this is fucking gold here. Bob Cottle and Dutch are at the desk, as usual, you know, with their banter. And
And I played like 10 minutes of promos and all that good stuff. But Bob Cottle, as he is stroking and jerking off primetime Brian Lee's new partnership with Ronnie Garvin, is interrupted by Ron Wright. And it starts, if you're watching along, at about the 19:15 mark in the episode. And it kicks off low-key. But pay attention once Ron Wright rolls into the screen, because you hear him yell before he gets the mic. So hold tight. I'm going to cue this fucking thing up, and we're about to have a grand fucking time here. You got it, bud?
Dutch, I think that's a tremendous coup for primetime Brian Lee to get Ronnie Garvin as his tag partner. What the heck is this?
Let me tell you something. It ought to be against the law. They shouldn't be allowed to bring Ronnie Garvin in here. That man's crazy. No, he ought to be suspended all over the world.
No, J-Ron, we're telling you, calm down. Take your heart pills, baby. Ronnie Garvin, who? Because you don't have to worry about nothing. You don't have to worry about one thing.
You know something? Just to let these people know, I saw Ronnie Garvin about 2 weeks ago. I was riding down past Charlotte. He was running on the interstate. He weighs about 250 pounds. His hair is gray. Don't worry about it. Everything is under control. Relax. You don't need to take no more. Everything is fine.
That's it. You know, primetime Brian Lee, I told you a long time ago, brother, that holding that world at tag, I can't even get it out right. I'm so excited. Ronnie who? You know, holding that Smoky Mountain title, calm down, Ron. Just calm down. I told you, holding that Smoky Mountain title, Brian Lee, was going to be a long, hard road. So you got scared, and you had to go get Ronnie Garvin. Well, big deal, because there's no way that Ronnie Garvin could ever knock me out with one punch. And what about his stupid little old pile driver?
Pile driver? You know that pile driver he used in 1948? Things have changed. I'm the ruler of the pile driver. And you know, Smoky Mountain Wrestling doesn't like the fact that we three rule the wrestling here. We dictate what's going on here. And we're going to tell you people out now that Ronnie Garvin is going down. And Brian Lee, I just don't think you're man enough to take the punishment that we're going to induce to you, my friend.
I just hope you people keep him in the ring. Don't let him get down on me, because I know that man's crazy. I know what he's doing.
You boys are going down. It's simple. Calm down. Just calm down, Rob. Don't worry about it.
Dutch.
Dutch. Is he okay?
I hope he's okay. I hope he'll get him off and onto the dressing room. Talking about prime time, Brian Lee. We didn't get him upset. I certainly didn't get him upset. But I know you were agreeing with him with everything they were saying about Ronnie Garvin and prime time Brian Lee.
Yes,
I don't agree with that.
Well, I was agreeing with it. I think prime time Brian Lee is looking for somebody to take part of that beating they're going to dish out on him myself.
And that's going to be something to see. By golly, you don't want to miss that. When prime time Brian Lee and Ronnie Garvin team together as a tag team.
Okay, Doc. Do you want to go talking about what you thought about the greatness of this?
Well, it's fun to listen to these as we do this, because there's a couple of things that I missed just because I was so entertained by watching Ron Wright, which I know we'll cover in a second. The one thing I got was that they're completely no selling this bullshit. They're like, Ron Garvin is an old man, fuck him, which is awesome. While Ron Wright's nervous and scared. And I also picked up that Orndorff was saying that he used the pile driver back in 1948, which is funny because that was before he was born. So I thought I liked that part. But I know where we're going with this, and I'm going to kick it back over to you because, you know, Ron Wright is your new personal hero, and he was on point here. So would you like to tell us what Ron was doing during this?
Oh, man. Well, first off, when the segment starts and he rolls in, I'm sure it might be hard to tell in the audio, but he's like, ah, like he just lets out this yell. And Bob Cottle's like, what the fuck? But then he rolls in and his first line is, it ought to be against the law. Not against the law, but against the law. For what Ronnie Garvin is doing. But Ron Wright is holding his chest, giving off an Oscar level performance. I truly lost my shit when Ron Wright reached into his front pocket, pulled out his pill bottle, which I assume was nitroglycerin for his heart pain he was having. Orndorff and Dirty White Boy, I don't know if they're just laughing because they that was what they wanted to do, or if they really just couldn't contain it and were like, this motherfucker's performance is so good, I just gotta laugh. And they're like laughing at this old man. Now, the key here is Ron is not laughing. He's selling the fuck out of it. I mean, he's holding his chest. He's doing the Fred Sanford. I mean, I don't know if they're laughing on purpose or they just really can't contain themselves at Ron Wright's great performance. He's patting his chest the entire time. I think Orndorff at one point says, take another pill, Ron. It just was so great. I don't know what else to say. I mean, you heard it, but when you watch it and see it and listen, you would be like, this dude is out there. He's working, brother. He's just working. And that was my thoughts on it.
Well, I thought that Paul Orndorff needed to face the camera was a slight nit. But I thought that the genius that Ron Wright was throwing down was, not only was he, like you said, patting his heart the whole time, he was also adding in the shortness of breath when he wasn't talking. So, I mean, it was just, he had either seen somebody have a heart attack before, or he was doing this from experience. But, I mean, he was knocking it out of the park for sure.
At one point, Orndorff said something like, man, what did he say? Ron Wright told Orndorff. He goes, I got scars on my head that man put on my head, man. He put some scars on me, brother. I don't know, man. I sure hope you can contain them. And whatever you do, keep them in the ring. Don't let them get down here on the ground by me on this wheelchair. I mean, he was working, and that's what made it so great. So I just loved it. Great segment. Are we done with that one so we can move on?
Yeah.
All right. So try to follow me here because we're back with Bob Cottle and Dutch. And Cottle wraps up the last segment with Ron, Dirty White Boy, and Orndorff and begins to explain that the Smoky Mountain Wrestling cameras are at all title matches. The cameras were rolling during a recent match with the Heavenly Bodies and Fantastics. The cameras were briefly shut down when Phil Rainey and his cameraman catches a wicked, wild brawl taking place between the Heavenly Bodies and the Fantastics. And Cornette is also in this mix too, which is kind of funny. Now, while there are a few shots delivered with like rubber trash cans and cardboard boxes, which I really always hated that with wrestling because it's kind of phony. I mean, you know that shit don't hurt. There are also other shots with what appears to be legit like wooden boards or planks of some type of wood. I don't know how hard the wood was. I couldn't tell you, but there's some pretty stiff shots. And then there's a couple of broom shots in there as well. Jackie and Bobby Fulton at the end of it are busted wide open during the brawl. It actually goes on for a very long time. I actually thought it went on for too long, to be honest with you. It ends what we saw in the opening segment that we talked about in the show with Jackie shattering Cornette's windshield as they drive off. Doc, do you want to comment now or after we get the Bullet Bob Armstrong update as this brawl is addressed?
I got a few things. You said they're split open. Bobby is cut the fuck open. He is bleeding good. My note was breaking boards overhead, so family friendly is gone.
Oh, that shit's gone, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, that is perfect. Gone. The shackles are off. We can be free.
Yeah.
We can get heat the right way. This obviously happened in a high school. You could see. How nervous do you think the school administrators were for this kind of activity? Because somebody from the school administration had to be there for the show.
I've actually seen some pretty nervous school administrators and people that manage school gyms and stuff on indie shows.
Right.
Now, it's we talked about it on the other show a few weeks back. Harper mentioned how the Louisiana Boxing and Wrestling Commission, at least in Louisiana, not when they work in other states, but the Boxing and Wrestling Commission in Louisiana now is very strict. They don't allow anything that pretty much back when I wrestled in the 90s, you could go into the crowd. I mean, you could do all kind of shit. You can't do that shit now. But whenever we went into the crowd and stuff and started doing insane stuff, you would always see like the administrators of the buildings and stuff. They would be wide eyed like, oh, shit, these motherfuckers are going to break something. And I mean, most promoters are good about the fact that they would pay for something if they did break it or whatnot. But anyway, yeah, I would imagine that these administrators were a little on edge at this. But then again, this is going on in the back in a hallway and not in the open, so who knows?
But if they break some shit in their school, somebody's gonna fix it, right?
Well, somebody's gotta fix it. And then the other problem, I will say one thing I saw a lot of, not just breaking of items, I saw personally on the indie scene a couple people go through some sheetrock walls or put some holes in them,
right?
I mean, melees. I mean, that's your, to me, that was a bigger thing more than actually breaking any thing per se. I mean, a metal chair, you're going to break those from time to time. A table, you're going to break it. But, man, you put somebody through a fucking sheetrock wall, or you go to throw a punch, or you're thrown up against one, and your body silhouette is then in the sheetrock. So, yeah, or a silhouette of your body where you fucking nailed the wall. Because, I mean, you take a wall pretty stiff. But anyway, yeah, to answer that question, I know it was long-winded, but go ahead.
Well, this is a wild-ass brawl, and so it goes on for a while, but these guys are legitimately selling the fact that they do not like one another. That's a shocking concept. They legitimately do not like one another. At some point, the camera's shaking because, remember, they caught this. They were packing up for the night probably, and now it's like, we got to go capture this brawl. Corny peels off at one point and says, let's get out of here, and goes and gets his car. And Bobby, I think it was, picks up a lead pipe and just shatters the back windshield as Corny and the Heavenly Bodies drive away. So just, I mean, you can argue the merits of how long it went on, but wild ass blood fighting at a house. You know, this goes on at a house show, and I know they were filming it for this, but just awesome territory wrestling.
Yep, it was great stuff, and that's what, one of the reasons why we love Smoky Mountain Wrestling. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to cue up Bob Cottle and Bullet Bob's response to this melee. Now, keep in mind, he said he was going to give the Fantastics a lot of leeway, and Cornette threw a fit saying he gave him a loaded gun on last week's episode. But anyway, let's get back to things.
Fans, that's about the wildest thing I've ever seen in all professional wrestling, that riot. Commissioner Bob Armstrong right here with us. Bob, what about that kind of action?
Well, I never realized that the Fantastics would go this far when I told them they could have a lot of leeway to settle their dispute with Cornette and the Heavenly Bodies. Now, they went too far. I'm glad a fan didn't get hurt. I'm glad it happened in a hallway instead of an arena. Now, I'm fining each man involved $1,500, and that includes Mr. Jim Cornette. I'm also signing a special max for the big Summer Blast event in mid-July. The Fantastics will be challenging the Heavenly Bodies in a special Smoky Mountain street fight match. That's no rules. Wear anything you want to, bring anything you want to, fight from start to finish.
All right, fans, down and dirty with Dutch Mantel when we come back right after this.
All right, Doc, I'll let you weigh in on what you heard here just now.
Well, the commissioner fucked up by giving the Fantastics leeway, obviously. I didn't know they'd go this far. You told them to go that far. So, I don't know. The finding everybody after telling them they can do it is sort of bullshit, in my opinion.
That's some Roger Goodell type bullshit. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Celebrate. We want you to celebrate after touchdowns and get the fans into it. And then as soon as you hop into a red bucket or, you know, pull out a Sharpie and sign a football, you get a fucking $25,000 fine.
Right,
so that
right.
was some chintzy ass bullshit, if you ask me. But I'm looking forward to a street fight. I always wanted to know. Here's what I want to know. You can bring anything. So why don't I just bring a gun and shoot you?
Well, I mean, you don't want to kill anyone. I mean, come on now. That sounds stupid.
Okay.
I mean, come on, man.
So anyway,
you're not gonna bring a gun to a fucking fight, okay? But you're that's stupid. But go ahead.
So anyway, I'm playing out the logic.
Okay.
Straight. But yeah, we have escalated the feud into a street fight. So these guys are getting ready to beat the piss out of each other once again.
Yeah, I like it. Each man on the team were fined $1,500, so that would be $3,000 for the Fantastics. And since the Heavenly Bodies, there's three of them, we got $4,500 in fines. These fines are starting to accumulate, wouldn't you say?
Yeah,
it's getting good.
That'll go into the kitty for a kick-ass Smoky Mountain Wrestling Christmas party this year.
There we go. Let's have a little fun here. Now we got down and dirty with Dutch Mantel. This shit kicks off, and let's just have some fun here. We're going to listen to Down and Dirty with Dutch on this week's episode, who this week, Down and Dirty with Dutch, he has Cornette and the Heavenly Bodies as his guests, and they are in the middle of the ring. So hold on, and I'll cue it up for us.
Mantel, and you're not. My special guest this afternoon, none other than Jim Cornette and the Heavenly Bodies of Smoky Mountain Heavyweight Champions. Now, we told you at the start of the program some activity that went on recently involving the Heavenly Bodies and the Fantastic. And Jimmy, I just want you to know that the actions of the Fantastics I consider despicable, deplorable. They should be locked up.
Look at this man's head. Do you see this right here? That's all because of the Fulton Palm.
Let me just say this. In the course of professional wrestling, you will meet some pretty despicable people. In the course of professional wrestling, you may even come across some kind of criminal element.
Absolutely.
Well, you know something? Jackie and Bobby Fulton are the exact criminal element that I'm talking about right now. Take a look at my face. Take a look at my head, and you tell me. You just saw the tape, and you saw the kind of criminal action the Fantastics took. Now, besides the fact that Stan and I are the Smoky Mountain Tag Team Champions, we got a lot of offers from all over the country, man. We got offers to do commercials in Hollywood. We got offers to cut record deals. And the Fantastics are not only trying to run us out of wrestling, but they're trying to keep us from our other interests, too. Well, I'm going to tell you something, boys. We are the Smoky Mountain Tag Team Champions, and we don't like getting things thrown in our face, and we don't like having our cards maligned and maliciously abused. And we do like being the Smoky Mountain Tag Team Champions, and we're here to tell you that you boys won't get away with any of it. Let me say something right now. I want you rednecks to listen up. Yeah, I'll turn my back to the camera. I want you hillbillies to listen up. And brother, I want most of all the Fantastics to listen up. You lost your head, Fultons. Sure, Jackie, you were in that hospital. They had to operate on you. They put that gas mask down across your face. They said count backwards from 100. You didn't know there was that small lingering doubt whether you'd wake up again. Bobby Fulton out in that waiting room, listening for news of whether that orthoscopic surgery went okay or whether he was going to have to find him a new tag team partner. You had time to think about what you were going to do. You made your decision. What you decided to do was go crazy, go nuts, lose your head, try to kill somebody, and the somebody you tried to kill was us.
That's right, Jimmy. Tell them.
Brother, they say you're never supposed to threaten to kill somebody. And I ain't going to say that out here that we're going to do it. But when we saw that lead pipe coming through the back of that windshield, we realized one thing. And that one thing was, you ain't talking about taking these titles anymore. You ain't talking about beating us up anymore. You ain't talking about hitting me over the head with another garbage can. You're talking about doing some serious damage, some permanent damage.
Wrong talk.
So what you have done, Bobby and Jackie Fulton, is you have allowed us to make a choice too. You have given us a choice. The choice is, do we let you try something like that again and next time you succeed?
Right.
Or do we prevent you from doing something like that by doing it to you before you get the opportunity to do it to us? Well, brother, I got this piece of information for you, Bobby and Jackie Fulton, and I'm looking you dead in the eyes, and I'm swearing to the good Lord above that every word I say is true. You give us a choice of you or us, and brother, you ain't gonna make it. Whatever we have to do, if it's break a leg, we'll do it. If it's break an arm, bust a head, end a career, however far we have to go to get you off our backs and prevent you from ever doing something like that again, brother, it's going to come down just that way. We ain't playing around no more. We can't afford to. This ain't wrestling no more. This is life or death, brother. And this is serious business. And these hillbillies, they may like to see it. They may think it's entertaining, but I think it stinks. Fultons, it's coming down on you, and it's coming down heavy.
Thank you, Jimmy, for being my special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, don't go away. Fantastic. I'd hate to be in your place. Don't go away, fans. We'll be right back in 2 minutes. Stay tuned.
Boy, Cornette is working.
That's how you do it.
He's working. Go ahead and chime in. Go ahead and tell me what you thought about everything.
Well, I thought it was absolutely awesome from start to finish. There's not a lot to add to it, although the line that got me, and you got to realize for the visual that by this point, Cornette had taken off his glasses to look into the camera and really sell it that he was serious, was this ain't wrestling anymore. This is life and death. And so they're really selling this personal issue. And we go, you know, it's not that hard. So I just absolutely top shelf awesome stuff from the guys here.
Yeah, Cornette worked it. I mean, he laid it in. He takes his glasses off. He gets serious. He kind of lowers his tone of voice at one point. I loved it all. I don't know what else to say. I mean, I think if I had to nitpick it, I would say that I don't know if they really needed Dr. Tom's part. Maybe Cornette could have done all the talking, although there's nothing wrong with what Dr. Tom said. It's just that Cornette was laying it on so thick. I mean, he claimed the Fantastics tried to kill them. I don't know if you caught that. You know, he said because they went this far, the Heavenly Bodies will take it to another level if they have to. He does all that. But he also says, I'm not saying we're going to kill anybody. So I thought that I liked the way he did that. I mean, he positions the promo where the Heavenly Bodies are the good guys in his mind, because that's what heels do. And they didn't start the war. And he's trying to tell the fans the Heavenly Bodies are innocent. But how quick he forgets that they ripped every ligament out of Jackie's knee when they injured him over a month ago, if you recall. So you're right. He got serious. He took the glasses off and he took the gloves off and he was like, we're about to do some business. You better be there to see it. And if I'm a paying customer back then, I want to see it and I want to see what goes down at Summer Blast. So it is what it is at that point. That's all I have. You got anything else before I move to the next segment?
No, just outstanding promo there.
All right. So let's go to the next segment. We got a promo by Tim Horner that we are going to play for everyone. And let me know what you think after it's done.
Fans with me right now, White Lightning, Tim Horner. Tim, a big, big match coming up for you, mid-July Summer Blast.
Well, that's right. You know, everybody knows the situation between me and Nature Boy Buddy Landell. And I had enough of Buddy Landell, and I told the people in Smoky Mountain Wrestling that if I couldn't beat Buddy Landell, I'd leave Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Well, Bob Collar, you see me still standing here. And I got my hand raised, and I won the match. But I didn't get done what I wanted to get done because, Buddy Landell, you ran. Well, I went to the promoters, and I went to Commissioner Bob Armstrong. And now we're going to have a strap match. 8 feet of leather, strap left hand to left hand. You can't go nowhere, Buddy Landell. If you run, you'll have to drag me, and that'll be fine, because when I catch you, I'm going to peel you like an onion. And in Summer Blast, I'm going to peel you like an onion, and you're going to look like about 4 or 5 pounds. Your back's going to look like about 4 or 5 pounds of ground round, I'm telling you.
Fans, that Summer Blast that's going to be taking place mid-July, you don't want to miss it. Right now, let's go to the ring.
He's going to peel him like an onion and his back's going to look like ground round, Doc.
I'm a little confused. So did I fall asleep and miss something? They already had their match where the loser, where he beat Landell and gets to stay?
No, I just think that they aired that kind of out of sequence, because that actually ends up happening at... That match happens at, oh shit, what's the name of it? Fire on the Mountain, I think?
Okay.
I think it's after Summer Blast. Yeah, it's
okay.
Really weird how they told the story on here, but you're right. It went from a loser leave town at Summer Blast to this strap match deal, and then at Fire on the Mountain they do a loser leaves town.
Okay.
Yeah, you're close, but the sequence of it and how they told it on TV did get kind of choppy.
Okay. Well, we can't trust Mike Skills Tim to be able to deliver the information. He's too busy jiving and socializing.
Anything else here?
This was a low point in the episode for me. So no, I like this episode. So let's focus on the positive here.
All right. Well, so let's go to the next. We got a match between Paul Lee and Nitro Danny Davis. Again in this episode, just quickly, this crowd is really pumped and they're into the show. I mean, they are hot and they are behind Nitro Danny Davis. Paul Lee is doing his Ric Flair thing where he's bumping and selling, you know, all the Ric Flair moves. I knock him, but, you know, whatever. I mean, he's doing the moves and he actually doesn't look that bad when he's doing it. And then what do you know? Before you realize it, Danny Davis gets the win with a neck breaker in a real quick match. The H-bomb, I believe it's called. You know, something, again, I believe we mentioned this on a previous episode, something you just don't see anymore. Thoughts on the match, Doc, and what we had here between Paul Lee and Nitro Danny Davis?
Well, Caudill calls Danny Davis a youngster. He was 39 at this time. So earlier, Garvin was an old man at 41. Davis is a youngster at 39. It just proves that back in the day before computers, you could tell anybody anything and they'd believe it. So I guess you could still do that with computers. So I don't understand why we can't have real wrestling anymore.
Hold on. How old is Bob Caudill at that point? You know, you got to
103.
You got to consider the source. I know Bob Caudill is old now, but man, I mean, think about how old he was back then saying that. I mean, if you got a 60-year-old man saying somebody's young at 39, that actually there's an explanation there. I mean, he's 21 years younger. I don't know how old he was back then. I'm just saying that.
You and I both know that Bob Caudill's been an old man for the entire time we've been alive.
Dude, that's what I know. And you see him now. I mean, I believe he walks with a cane, man. I mean, he still obviously looks the same, but he's definitely him and Lance Russell. You can tell they were old when we were young. They are really old now, which I guess that just happens to everyone at some point. You
Father
get old.
Time does, Father Time does no jobs. The other thing that was mentioned in here, did you catch that Davey Rich got hurt broke his leg and they attributed it to the heavenly bodies?
No, they said that though on commentary, now that you mention it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't make a note of it, but now that you say it, yeah. Okay.
So we've got to push pause on the party. Because one of the Rich brothers is a broken leg, so and who knows how he did it, but attributing it to the heavenly bodies only builds up the fact that these guys are killers, and that they will do anything to stay on top. So good deal.
Right, right. I like that. I mean, look, leave some suspense. There was no way. Look, who knows how he did it, man? I mean, he may have just done it in a match on a house show, but whatever. The story is good, and we'll go with it.
He might have been dirt biking on his property in Cameron, North Carolina, and broke his leg. Who knows?
I doubt that. But anyway, let's go to the next segment, which is a Buddy Landell promo, and then we'll react to it.
You know, last week on TV, I'd have screwed old Tim Horner out of a chance to make a tag team champion. Seems that's what I'm good at, making people's lives miserable. Tim flips his car. He can't even have supper with his old lady. Primetime Brian Lee. The few short years, you've been a professional wrestling boy. You made a pretty good name for yourself. You're the top of the heap in Smoky Mountain Wrestling. But let me tell you something, big boy. Paul Orndorff and Dirty White Boy ain't the only one you got to worry about. Today on TV, I get my shot again. The last time I wrestled you, I had a temperature of about 115. Today I'm feeling pretty spry big time. That's right, today on TV. You're all mine.
Doc, I got to say one thing. When Buddy said he can't even have supper with his old lady, I swear he was about to say can't even have sex with his old lady.
I thought the same thing just listening to it. I don't think supper is something that is held all over the country or all over the world. So do you want to tell people exactly what supper is?
Dinner.
Yeah, it's dinner. But it's supper. You have supper in the South, don't you?
I don't actually know. Now that you say that, I mean, I always seem to remember it was dinner. But
I don't want. I mean, we have some fans in the UK. I don't want them to think that supper is some sort of code word for nailing his wife.
Oh, okay. I got you. From the fans in the UK. Okay. Yeah,
dinner, I think everybody worldwide, because, this podcast doesn't just go to the Smoky Mountains. It goes worldwide. We're a worldwide podcast now. That dinner is fairly commonly accepted as the evening meal, but supper is something that's, not quite as well known.
Yeah, I guess you're right there. Okay. Any other thoughts from Buddy's promo there from you?
I thought it was kind of average, actually, and maybe the only reason I think that is because of what we're going to see here in a little bit. So yeah, let's keep going.
I agree. But I got to say, Buddy is loving working that 105-degree temperature that he had.
He must have a virus or something.
Yeah, he constantly has 105-degree temperature whenever he loses to someone. So anyway, we got the next match, which is Primetime Brian Lee versus Buddy Landell. This one is for the Smoky Mountain Wrestling heavyweight title, or the strap, as we like to call it, brother. Dutch and Bob have a little back and forth going on in the beginning. Bob says Buddy might be distracted in this one because Buddy has his mind on Tim Horner and their feud. Dutch says, well, it works both ways, Bob Caudill. Dutch says Primetime Brian Lee also has his mind on Orndorff and Dirty White Boy. So Primetime Brian Lee could be distracted just like Buddy might be distracted. They worked it was just a back and forth in the beginning. The guys, Primetime Brian Lee and Buddy Landell, they worked the crowd for most of this match. Buddy does his hair pulling spot as he pulls Primetime Brian Lee's mullet over and over to get some cheap heat, because that's what you did back in the day. Doc, you understand what I mean by cheap heat when I say that?
Yeah.
Okay, just making sure. You're slightly smarter than the average bear, but I just wanted to ensure you understood where I was going. We're barely 5 minutes into this thing when Buddy pulls a gimmick out of his trunks, wraps it around his hand. I assume it was a chain, but I couldn't tell. But Tim Horner comes out to save the day, And with the ref's back turned, as Buddy is close to the ropes, Horner rips the gimmick out of Horner's hand, out of Buddy's hand, I'm sorry. And I say gimmick because, again, I can't tell what it is. Primetime Brian Lee is spot on and schoolboys him. When I say spot on, he's right there. Schoolboys him from behind as Horner's ripping it out of his hand. And then he gets the win on Buddy. Dutch has a fit saying it's a conspiracy and that where's the justice when Buddy gets screwed over. Doc, you want to give your thoughts on this very quick match?
I thought it was a little too short for my liking, but all in all, it was a good match, and it continues some of the angles there. Did you also notice that when Buddy came out, you know, his intro music is I'm Too Sexy. Caudill says that song is upbeat. So what are the odds that Bob Caudill knew the lyrics or what that song was about?
0%.
Right.
0.1 maybe.
So I found it funny that Caudill was entertained by I'm Too Sexy.
Yeah, I would agree.
But all in all, I mean, it's Landale and Primetime. Primetime has greatly improved since he's won the belt. Again, good match, but let's get moving to what is about to happen.
Well, and here's the thing about that match. I know you said it was quick and you'd like to go it longer. Just keep in mind that is a part of the storyline for Buddy Landale and Tim Horner.
True.
That's why they did that. So the important thing here is not the actual match and that Primetime Brian Lee won. The memorable thing from the storyline and the angle perspective would be that Tim Horner got Buddy Landale, got in Buddy Landale's head when he screwed him at his chance at winning the title. So it progresses that storyline a little bit further and we go from there. So I thought that was fine. Now, let's go.
Okay,
to the next.
Let me just say this before you cue it up.
Okay.
The next 2 minutes of promo that you're going to hear is absolutely my favorite 2 minutes of Smoky Mountain so far.
That's saying a lot to say that that's your favorite 2 minutes.
And it may be my favorite couple of minutes of the entire first year of Smoky Mountain that we still have yet to get to, but we'll see. But this is just
you just want me to hit the play button?
I guess.
Yeah, this is really good, and I will chime in as soon as it's over because this is great. So hold on, let's get it started, and please enjoy this great commentary we're about to hear and great promo.
Wrestling fans, everybody is talking about Smoky Mountain Championship Wrestling throughout Virginia, throughout Tennessee, over in North Carolina. Everybody wants to be at ringside to see Smoky Mountain Championship Wrestling, and everybody wants to be at ringside to see stars like Nature Boy Buddy Landale, who's wreaked a lot of havoc right here in the Smoky Mountain area.
Well, you know, let me give a little bit of insight here. A lot of people don't know this, but the Dirty White Boy and the Nature Boy, we went to high school together. Remember, you didn't really like me that much, see, because the Nature Boy was a woman's man. You know what I'm saying?
I'd
be combing my hair. No, but you was a headhunter.
I'm a good man.
You was a headhunter.
You know
Remember? He was taking heads off, beating people up. I always had a bad attitude.
Still do.
Yeah.
You talking about bad attitudes. You talking about loudmouth. You talking about somebody getting nasty. I'm talking about this man right here, Nature Boy Buddy Landale. He knows what it's all about just like I do.
You know, if you got to get a little mean and you got to get a little nasty, you know, you got to peel everything off. And then you got to get real wild.
Heaven, baby.
And then if you got to go down and you got to pull somebody's eye out or reach your head down their throat and pull her big tongue out, ain't nothing for me and the Nature Boy, right?
You know what? We ain't in Madison Square Garden. We ain't in the Cow Palace out in San Francisco. You know why? We got bad attitudes. That's why. This is Smoky Mountain Wrestling, baby. This is where it's happening. You got to be tough to work here now, people. Y'all up around in Virginia Hills and Tennessee, y'all know what I'm talking about. Ain't no kissing hind end around here, baby. Ain't no brown nosing going on.
No.
I don't know how to do politics. If I would, I'd be world champion. No. But I ain't. We're Smoky Mountain Wrestling reaping havoc, just like we was in high school.
Ooh, somebody
with wrestling fans, when Smoky Mountain Wrestling comes to your area, don't forget to have a ringside seat to see two of the meanest guys in the Smoky Mountain area. You'll want to be there.
Doc, I got to say something before you chime in with what we just heard. Just one thing. Can I chime? I want to say one thing before we get started, and then I'll let you rip into it, okay?
Please.
It is quite apparent here, one thing or two things. One, Buddy Landell probably just did a line of one or two of Mullet of Morton's best eight balls. And that's no disrespect to Buddy. I'm just trying to emphasize the hype that Buddy Landell has here. I don't know if Dirty White Boy was into those types of things, but he may have partaken. But hey, if he's listening to this, because I know he's still alive, I'm not insinuating that you did those things. I'm just trying to poke some fun here.
Neither one of these guys is sober, and I don't care. It's awesome.
But and so that's one thing. The other thing is, Buddy shoots all over the WWE in this, and it's great. But I'll let you chime in at that point.
Well, okay, so one of the reasons I like it is that there's not an angle. There's no reason for these two guys to be together other than that they're two heels and they're talking about Smoky Mountain and trying to drum up the, you know, why Smoky Mountain is the best place to be. But in doing that, we get all kinds of, you know, they talk about they got bad attitudes. Okay, but do you think I got a question, because there's the line that Buddy says, I don't do politics. If I did, I'd be world champ. Do you think somebody like Corny talked to him afterwards and said, you can't say that?
No, I don't. Well, I don't think so. No. I don't. Well, the only reason I say that is because I think of some of the stuff that Cornette has said in his promos. If you remember early on in like episodes 1 and 2, he talked about how you don't have to be, you know, we're going to make wrestling the way it should be, you know, not cartoon characters. And
But the point is that we had just seen Buddy Landell fight for the world title and lose. And he said, if it weren't for politics, he'd be world champion. Well, you just had a title match with the world champ. Why didn't you beat him?
I don't think so. And the reason I say that is because you got to remember, this isn't live. I mean, this is taped. So this promo's taped. Cornette had to know that was going on air. So if he really didn't like what he said, he wouldn't have allowed it to be on air. So I don't think he would have talked to him. No, I don't think so. But it was awesome because of that.
Right. Well, yeah, because he talks about the Madison Square Garden and the Cow Palace, and you got to be tough to work in Smoky Mountain. That's probably also a jab at WCW and the end of the NWA as well, I would imagine, from Buddy. What I think is, first of all, you have to go back and watch this, because
he's higher than giraffe pussy in my mind. I could be wrong, but he's fucking high.
They both look like to me that they were off doing whatever it is they did recreationally. And again, I don't give a shit. And they had no idea they had to cut TV promos, and somebody tapped them on the shoulder and they were like, well, fuck it, let's go. What's interesting to me this week doing this episode is that one of our marks out there put a video out on the Twitter of Dirty White Boy and Buddy Landell in 1982 in Mid-Atlantic cutting a promo together.
Did you see that?
I did.
Yeah,
and
that,
so
that was really Matt. Yeah, that was from Matt on Twitter. He posted that, and I fucking loved it with Dirty White Boy with an
Sorry,
afro.
I said Mark. I meant Matt. You know, I get them confused sometimes.
Oh, fuck you. You're an asshole.
But in that, when they cut the promo, they're baby faces. Buddy has black hair. Tony Anthony has a afro and kind of looks like a young Harley Race almost with it. It's just interesting to see what 10 years in the business has done to these guys, or for or to these guys. So it was really interesting to see that this week and then see this promo as we're going through it. But yeah, I think we're underselling the fact of how high they look when you watch this. And it's almost like they're cracking. You know how when you're around somebody who's drunk or inebriated or altered in some way, they think they're the funniest person in the room. So they're cracking each other up, too, which is hilarious to watch on the screen, because Bill Rainey is standing there like, fuck, this is not going well.
He's like,
so this,
yeah.
So it was, and it was just the idea that it was wheels off from Jump Street. They went to the same high school. They blah, blah, blah. And just from 0 to 60 all the way through, just messed up, but still being able to pull it off and that they're going to kick somebody's ass. So, yeah, that was my favorite couple of moments of Smoky Mountain so far for a couple of reasons.
I think, like, to me, again, look, I'm poking fun. I don't know if Buddy was high. I don't know if Dirty White Boy was high. But when you looked at Buddy's eyes, Buddy looked like he was fucking wired. It's great. And he just starts shooting. He's like, this ain't Madison Square Garden. This ain't the Kyle Palace in San Francisco. And he's just going off. And it's no disrespect because we love Buddy. And rest in peace, Buddy. And we wish you were still here because I'd love to interview you for this show.
God, that would be great. And how can it be disrespect? This is my favorite two moments of the promotion so far.
Yeah, and we've praised Buddy from day one in the promotion. I just love it. But it's just so great. Like, I mean, the Buddy insinuating that if he kissed enough ass and politicked that in those other organizations that he'd be world champion. I mean, I want you to put that into perspective. Look, in 2017 now that we're here, everyone knows that, you know, kayfabe, I hate that term, but it's dead. People know the business is a work. 1992, I mean, there were people who knew it was a work because it was the cap was coming off the bottle, so to say. However, Buddy's just like, fuck it. If I would have politicked, I would have been world champion. I mean, he just put it out there. It's just, fuck this shit. If I politicked, I'm world champion and get used to it. And I thought that was great, even though it probably wasn't the smartest thing to do. If you're trying to protect kayfabe, I still loved it because, God, he's just – I mean, what do we want from these wrestlers a lot of times when they're cutting promos? We want honesty, right? We want them to – I mean, believe it or not, we don't – a lot of people don't want to say it, but – you want some truth involved in the promo because that's what makes you suspend your disbelief. Well, if you give me some truth, I'm going to pop off at that. I'm going to be like, oh, that was fucking great. And that's what I thought.
And if I think one shred of it is true, because I already know that it's not, but if I think one shred of it is true, I'm going to look for other things that might be true that I can believe in too.
Right. Cite the CM Punk pipe bomb as an example. He said a couple of things that were definitely true. So you went along for that ride of 5 to 6, 7 minutes of promo because he was fucking shooting in your eyes. And again, right, we know some of those things were true, but it's just that it was like, oh, shit, he got me. And whenever that happens, again, Doc, you didn't see it. Maybe you listened to it on the show, but the Nikki Bella and Natalya promo, when Natalya called Nikki a bitch and told her John would never marry her and all that good stuff because she wasn't good enough, you sat back and you're like, shit, she called her a bitch. And I mean, she went off on her. And the thing was about it, whether you want to realize it or not, or whether Natty was shooting, it made you sit back and go, shit, she's actually telling the truth there. And that's what I can buy into. So there you go. I said something good about WWE again. Anyway, this promo, that's what that was. There was some truth laced into it, along with a couple of guys who may or may not have been high or inebriated. And it made it great. And I love the end. Because I swear someone gave Phil Rainey a cue and said, cut this shit off. We got to go. Did you catch that at the end at all?
I think Phil Rainey was trying to dig a hole with his shoes from the minute it started, which is great, too.
All right, let me get to the last promo, which Buddy is cutting a promo at the very end of this episode, and let's see what Buddy has to say. This is post match after Tim Horner has screwed him here.
All right, Tim Horner, I'll give that one to you. You must have been up all night watching Nature Boy Buddy Landell films, seeing how to get the job done. If you can tell by the look on my face and the change of tone in my voice, I'm just a little bit ticked off. You just cost me a title shot, baby. You just cost me not the title shot. You cost me the belt. I had the goof beat right in the middle of the ring. Tim Horner, let me tell you something. Summer Blast, you asked for this match. You got to be a blithering idiot. Strapped with an eight foot wristbands, leather. You're mine all day, Tim Horner. You just stepped over the bounds, big boy. Now you're in my territory.
Fans, next week right here, you're going to see in action Paul Orndorff, a surprise tag team, and more on Summer Blast 92. So long for now.
All right, Doc, what you got to say about our final promo with Buddy Landell cutting it and basically calling Tim Horner a blithering idiot, which I absolutely loved.
Yeah, I thought so too. And the strap match, and you cost me the belt. And which may or may not have been true, but who cares?
Right.
Just more Buddy. They're advancing the feud, and good deal.
Yep. I absolutely loved it. This was good. You know, Buddy tells Horner he gives him that one on pulling that cheating move that he just did off, and he's mad at him that he cost him the title. But I love the line, the blithering idiot, and that they'll see what happens at Summer Blast 92, which they never give a date on when this Summer Blast 92 is going to happen. I don't recall, at least. So I don't know. Did you kind of catch that at all?
Summer.
They never really. Well, no, they don't give an exact date is what I'm saying.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't recall ever getting an exact date. So that's why I was like, what is this?
I'm going to tell you what I tell the kid in the backseat when we're driving. We get there when we get there.
Well, I guess you do have a slight point there, even though you can be a dick and a prick a lot of times. All right, Doc, we're going to give out some disability checks here, and it's we got a lot that we're going to do. And I know you said this is one of your favorite episodes. We're running long this week, but you know what? This was a fucking hot episode, really, really good stuff, and we were highly entertained. I just want to say thank you if you've downloaded this and listening for the first time. If it is your first time, subscribe to us. iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, however you get your podcast, and do us a solid and give us a 5-star review on iTunes. We would appreciate it. It helps grow the show. And then when the show is out there, please retweet it. Share it on Facebook. Retweet it on Twitter. If you want to follow us on Twitter, it's @BTT_podcast. I'm at Mike504Saints. But to help grow the show, I can't tell you how many people have found the show, not from doing a search on iTunes for Smoky Mountain Wrestling. It's just that they have friends who are into Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and they see your tweet, your retweet of our episodes, and they're like, hey, I need to check that out. I get messages all the time on, hey, I found the show this way. I'm so glad I did, because I would have never known about it. We don't do advertising. There's no budget out there for me to go, hey, I want to plug this on Monday Night Raw. Not that I would ever want to pay that much money to do it. But anyway, please follow us on Twitter, @PTT_podcast. I'm at Mike504Saints. And again, 5-star reviews on iTunes, if you love the show, would certainly be appreciated. We have our patron membership now. If you go to MikeMills.podbean.com, at the very top of the page, there's a green button. It says Become a Patron. There are two options. You can choose the $1 a month member or the $2 a month member. There are some perks to being a $1 or $2 a month member. Again, what's $1 a month? I mean, you're talking about $12 a year. The $2 option would be $24 a year. But look, it's not. You could probably find the coins in your sofa nowadays for that. And there are some perks to it. You know, like you'll be able to possibly deliver your very own top five. Maybe join us for a Smoky Mountain Wrestling show. Cut a promo on asshole number one over here, Doc Turner, who thinks he knows shit from Shinola, but he doesn't know shit from sugar. So what the fuck ever. You could be on air, cut a promo on him, and I think that would be a beautiful thing. I'm actually curious to see how great these promos would be against you, because, brother, people hate you. You realize that, right?
What?
Exactly. So all that said, check it out. If there's something you want me to add to the Patreon membership, you know, email me at bookingtheterritory@gmail.com or DM me, and I will consider. You know, here's the thing. We do these shows for free. Whether you become a patron member or not, the shows will remain free, at least for the time being. I'm not into what other podcast networks do by charging people for shows. So that's why I set up the patron membership. If you want to even be more interactive with us as a patron and possibly be on a show, even if it's just a 2-minute promo on Doc Turner, join the Patreon membership for $1 or $2 a month, and we'd appreciate it. You can also support us via the PayPal link. It's also at mikemills.podbean.com at the very top of the page. That's if you want to do a one-time donation. We'd appreciate it. $1 or $2, whatever you can give would be appreciative. And then we have our Amazon referral link. If you shop on Amazon, it doesn't cost you a dime extra. That's a great way to support the show, because you're not spending anything extra. They just throw us a little bit of money in return whenever you use it. All right, Doc, let's do it. We got a lot to unpack here, a lot of disability checks to hand out and government cheese awards. So how many disability checks are you giving out this week?
Well, again, this is my favorite episode so far. You've got a big name coming in Ronnie Garvin. You've got a hellified brawl between the heavenly bodies and the Fantastics, with some promos being cut about that were serious. And you've got the Landale-Horner ongoing feud. You've got Ron Wright coming out with Dirty White Boy and delivering an Oscar performance. And then, by God, you've got the Dirty White Boy and Buddy delivering some shoot commentary towards the end of the episode. This episode was packed and stacked and jacked and jip-jiving and socializing for your doc. I'm going to give this, and boy, you know I'm a hard grader, so I don't just hand this stuff out. I'm going to give out 8.1 disability checks for this.
Wow. Wow. I'm shocked. 8.1. That's impressive.
That's the highest score I have doled out. You're shocked. Did you think that would be more? Or
you're a hard grader. You're yeah. a very hard grader. Look, I'm going to give
this
it
a, this had everything that great territory wrestling programs had all in a 50-minute package. It was glorious.
Yeah, it definitely was. I have to agree with you. I'll give it 8.5. There was some the promo. We played a lot. We're going long in this episode. It's because we played a lot of promos. There were a lot of promos on this episode, but there were a lot, but they were, for the most part, really, really good and entertaining.
Bunch of people talking shit about what they're about to do to somebody.
Right, which... wrestling is talking shit, especially I love when a heel talks shit and fucking pops things off that way. That's what I love. So a lot of promos here. I gave it 8.5. I just thought it was really good, a really good episode. So I'll do the Government Cheese Award. I'm going to give the Government Cheese Award to the segment with Ron Wright, Paul Orndorff. I got to give it to all three of them. Because I thought that they all contributed to it. You had Ron Wright having his heart attack and taking his nitroglycerin pill. And then you had Paul Orndorff, take another pill, Ron, if you need to. And then you had Ron the whole time, like, oh, God. Oh, come on. I don't think y'all understand what this man can do to me. And then you had Dirty White Boy and Paul Orndorff laughing at Ron because I guess they couldn't hold character. I don't know. I just thought it was great. So I had to go with the Dirty White Boy segment. What was yours, Doc?
Well, there were so many.
Yeah, there
so
really
many,
was.
So many candidates that we just rolled through when I went through the disability checks. I was tempted to give it to Jim Cornette because this, to me, was the first, like, thank you for giving. Not only, I mean, we love Smoky Mountain. We've loved it so far. But this was just like, man, your promotion kicks ass. And, I watched this, and it made me feel like it was 7-8 years before, actually, 1992 when I watched this episode. But I decided to give my government cheese to the Dirty White Boy and Buddy Landale because I have a feeling they need some food on their stomachs right now after cutting that promo. So I gave them some government cheese, so hopefully they get some food on their stomach.
That was awesome. Are you saying that they were smoking herb, or I'm confused? What are you saying?
They may have the munchies, or they may just be, you know, when you drink a little bit much, you want to get some food on your stomach so that it soaks up some of the alcohol. Just, I don't know, but they deserve it with the content, and I feel like they may need it based on their appearance in there. So, again, this is, I told you guys back in the day when I was giving out sixes that I had to have some room to go when the episodes started getting better. And we've talked about this, I think, last week. It's about to heat up this summer, and it's going to get hot here in a minute. And so not only was this episode great, but it's a harbinger of things to come. So, I mean, we're getting ready to really strap it in and get it going.
You said it's about to heat up, bro. It's there. I mean, and look, you know, no secret. I think I mentioned this last week, man. I'm into 40s on the episodes as far as watching it, as we full episodes, that is. I've seen other things further on down the line, obviously, but actually watching full episodes, I'm into the 40s, and this shit, it pops off, man. And they really, I got to give great Brian Last some credit. He told me towards the later mid to late part of 92, shit pops off, and I got to admit, towards the end, middle portion of 92, it really pops off. So, Doc, you know, anything else that I missed as we were wrapping things up on this episode?
No, I think, again, this is we've taken another step up. I mean, we've been watching some really good professional wrestling, and I think some Southern Territory wrestling, and today was just the highlight so far, and a signal of things to come.
Right, I have to agree. So that basically is going to put a bow on episode 22 of from June the 27th of 1992, Smoky Mountain Wrestling. I got to say, this was a hot episode. We got some great things to come, so stay tuned. You're going to enjoy as we get further on down the line into things with Smoky Mountain. And, Doc, I just I'm looking forward, man. I am, as we record this on January 1st, 2017, I am as excited as I will ever be in regards to what is about to pop off with Smoky Mountain Wrestling.
Man, if you guys are just getting in for the ride, or you've been along with us for a ride and you're following along and you haven't gone ahead, this is going to be a fun-ass year of doing Smoky Mountain podcasts, because this, we're going to be covering 92 into 93. It is consistently awesome wrestling.
That is it for now. for Mike and Doc, go sign up, become a patron member. That way you can cut a promo on Doc Turner and tell him to go fuck himself. Choose the $2 option if you can afford it. Choose the $1 option if you can afford it. We definitely would appreciate it. I think we covered all the promos this week on the episode, so I don't know if there's anything else to plug in at the end. If there is, I'll plug it on there like I always do. But for Mike and Doc, you know what we always say when we get out of here? Book it, bitch.